97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Time to chat a little, talk a little football. College football, NFL, camps getting started in the NFL. College football camps will begin later on this week. I think Thursday is when BYU starts. I know Utah State, I believe on Friday. We're ready to get this thing going. Time to chat with Brian Fisher on the Smart Rain guest line. It's no secret Utah's in an extreme drought. That's why Smart Rain is the solution for any commercial property concerned about water consumption while managing irrigation. Find out more at smartrain.net. Joining us now, Brian Fisher from Athlon. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Brian.
I am staying busy, that's for sure, guys.
I bet.
So let's talk about the summit with the Pac-12 and the Big 12 commissioners. I'm sure nothing of any consequence is going to come out of it immediately, but would it make sense for those two to essentially join maybe the Pac-20, I guess? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is, first of all, a little background. I think this meeting has been on the books for a while now, and so very, very informational. I think, the commissioners do speak quite regularly between the two of each other. Obviously, it's a different ball game nowadays with everything that is going on with the landscape. But I think it's important to kind of keep in mind that, the Pac-12 throughout really, George Kleofkov's taking over, have been really patient, have been very much, listening and making sure that they understand what options are on the table for the conference. And I think that's kind of where we're at is they're kind of listening. They want to see and hear, what the Big 12 is proposing or ultimately wants to do or what their kind of thinking is. And it'll kind of go from there. Now, I think the ultimate issue at the end of the day is, does Fox, ESPN, CBS, NBC, whoever is ultimately going to be bidding on potential Pac-12 rights, what is the market kind of telling the league in terms of a scheduling alliance, a merger, going to market at the same time in terms of those media rights? That, to me, is kind of the bigger question looming over not just this meeting today, but kind of everything that's been going on with college realignment.
How much do things change now with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC? I've heard rumors of how many conference games are going to be played, but what does this change in the long run, in your opinion?
Well, obviously, it entrenches, the SEC as the premier conference in college football. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Obviously, the relationship that they have with ESPN in terms of the marquee landing rights for all of their games, just the way that relationship between the SEC network, what the league is going to do, I think that really firmly entrenches ESPN and the SEC as kind of the premier entities in college football. And obviously, there's a lot of money at stake. I think for the rest of the league, they are going to see a little bit of a dilution in terms of some of their games. I would imagine the conference is almost assuredly going to go to 9 conference games, which just makes a lot of sense. I think there's a lot of people inside the league that have been clamoring for that the last couple of years. Certainly, I think the 10 game schedule they played a year ago against all SEC competition did open some others' eyes in terms of expanding the number of conference games, and frankly, that's another way to generate additional money. It's not just bringing in these marquee powers and blue bloods like Texas and Oklahoma, to your stable of the Alabamas and Floridas of the world. Adding a whole lot of extra inventory in a 16-team conference is going to mean even more extra money for a lot of those schools out there. So it just makes sense from the SEC's perspective, but I think there's going to be quite a bit of dialing down for the schedule in particular and how the new league is really going to look, not just in terms of determining when Texas and Oklahoma ultimately join, but protecting some of those rivalries, sorting out divisions, potentially pods. There's going to be a lot of options for the SEC to consider on the table, and they're going to explore them quite thoroughly over the next couple of months and couple of years.
Realistically, in your mind, when do you think Oklahoma and Texas plays an SEC conference game?
I would be shocked if it's not in 2 years. I think obviously you're talking about this season and next. I think that certainly makes a lot of sense from both parties' perspective. This is going to be a case that let's face it, it's going to go to court. And in some manner, the both Texas and Oklahoma in terms of what they want to pay. I think, the Big 12, they obviously want to get to market and kind of understand, ultimately what the landscape is and how they might be able to not only stay together, but what other further realignment moves are there still to be made on behalf of the schools and on behalf of the conference itself. And so I think for everybody involved, you're probably going to see 2 years. I think all the Big 12 teams certainly want to host Texas and Oklahoma both at home and make sure that their fans have a proper way to say goodbye in a wink-wink, nudge-nudge type of standpoint. And let's face it, I think from the SEC standpoint, the way their television contracts are structured, it just makes a lot more sense for them to wait another 2 years to where you can have the SEC deals start to kick in and where you can even further renegotiate some of those things to where they join probably in 2023.
Brian, I wonder how much this caught certain members of the Big 12 off guard. And I wonder if all members of the Pac-12, all presidents and all universities are just actively engaged in trying to hear all the undercurrent, because it does feel like some of these universities were caught off guard. And I wonder, is there a chance we see something happen with the Pac-12 and have Pac-12 schools kind of left surprised and caught off guard and potentially left out of the party?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a lot of feeling scorned, and on behalf of a lot of the Big 12 members, because this did catch them really completely off guard, and I think it certainly did not help. The Texas president was in front of a state Senate committee on Monday, and hearing how long this has been going on, dating back to last fall, I think that even kind of further ratcheted up some of the angst and some of the anger at Texas and OU, because the Big 12, it seemed like everybody was kind of working together, certainly through all the COVID issues and everything that these universities and these college football teams and college basketball teams were having to deal with, that did bring the league, a sense of feeling a little bit closer. And then to have this almost betrayal, really has rubbed, a lot of people the wrong way inside the Big 12. And, I think on top of, looking at the existential threat that they see, there's just a lot of anger at Texas and OU for really doing this behind their back. I mean, they had the Texas president, as part of their negotiating committee in terms of looking into extending the media rights, heavily involved in a lot of league matters and a lot of confidential league matters that really do affect the future of the Big 12. And to have them turn around and know now that they were not just thinking about this move, but actually talking with Greg Sankey, dating back to the spring, I think it just kind of adds another layer, to the feeling that a lot of the Big 12 schools are out there. And, when it comes to the Pac-12, I do sense there's certainly more collegiality, out west with a lot of the Pac-12 presidents. I think there is going to be a healthy dose of skepticism, certainly with universities like USC, which obviously has the kind of flagship brand. And I know there's probably some that might be worried, about USC down the road, but I do get a sense that because there is a new commissioner, because a lot of the presidents and athletic directors are involved in so many league matters now, certainly much more so over the past month, now that there's been some turnover in the conference office, I don't think anybody's going to be completely surprised like, say, the Big 12 ultimately saw play out these last couple of months.
Brian Fisher of Athlon, kind enough to join us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Clemson and Florida State were very quick to tamp down any of the reports that they had reached out to the SEC as well. But with that said, do you think there were maybe some backdoor conversations about those two schools trying to jump to the SEC?
Well, I think it's just so doubtful because of the way the grant of rights is structured. And frankly, I think they would almost have to be making the move after, certainly Texas and Oklahoma sort out their legal battle with the Big 12. And, I do think there's certainly between the Florida State, which is undergoing, a leadership transition. They're getting a new president in. They are just really not in kind of a position to make a move like this, given all the restructuring that is occurring there in Tallahassee. I think Clemson, maybe did some back channel, just wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, is there a spot if we're coming? In case something blows up, there might have been some contact between some intermediaries, but nothing official, I think, because let's face it, the ACC also understands that they are very much bound together. They are looking at the landscape, too, to where they can possibly use what's going on now to renegotiate their TV contract, maybe not to bring themselves up to par with the SEC, but certainly, in, you know, close that gap between that they're certainly looking at right now. And, you know, there's a new commissioner involved. There's a lot of new athletic directors around that conference. And so, you know, I don't think that while there might have been some small conversations on the periphery, I don't think there was anything formal. And I think that's the reason why Clemson and Florida State were very quick to kind of issue their statements and back channel to a lot of folks that there's nothing to this, because frankly, they can't really go anywhere until some other matters are settled within the ACC and within the larger college football landscape.
Was that all off one sports personality's tweet?
Yeah, I think it originated almost completely off of a radio guy in South Carolina, and,
wow.
And I mean, I think you can kind of go back to the fact that there was really no national reporters that have either confirmed this or advanced the story at all. Now, I think it's always important to keep in mind too that when you hear a lot of these things, and especially with college realignment, universities are big businesses. There's a lot of people involved, and so from regents to presidents to athletic directors, coaches, there's a lot of people out there that can maybe or maybe not have, conversations out there, but they don't really represent what the ultimate, university is going to do in terms of decision-making. So I always think that is important to kind of keep in mind when you do start to hear some of these realignment rumors out there. This is still a small business. People know each other and people have conversations all the time. But in terms of actually making decisions, actually making policy at these big flagship universities, it does take a very select few people that actually have that kind of power.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of people out there that think they're part of the decision-making process that aren't, and probably like to talk to people, and then things can get sideways pretty quickly. There's no doubt about it. But, it's interesting. If you were George Kliavkoff and you're running the Pac-12, would you be looking to add teams? Because, there also seems to be some rumors out there that who knows what the Big Ten's going to do before it's all said and done. If you're the Pac-12, would you be aggressive in trying to maybe build your numbers in case that happens?
I think they need to be strategic about this. And let's face it, I don't think any of these schools, whether it's the remaining leftovers in the Big 12, whether it's Mountain West programs, that they really do not add the value to grow the pie large enough to where it does make sense for the Pac-12. And frankly, I don't think the media partners either that are going to be bidding on a lot of these rights, really want to be paying for these extra schools either. So I think you got to kind of keep that in the back of your mind. I don't know if there's really anything out there outside of a strategic alliance with the Big Ten that really does make sense in terms of adding schools for the Pac-12. If they can do a deal with the Big Ten, obviously there's the historical ties between the two conferences, not just at the Rose Bowl, but over the decades between the two schools playing each other, certainly a similar academic profile between the two leagues, and the fact that both conferences do have those split rights packages with both Fox and ESPN, both in a lot of major markets that are important to both companies. I think it would be, behoove the Pac-12 certainly to see what's out there, not with the Big 12, but with the Big 10 in particular, and give them some extra exposure, throughout the central part in the Midwest and up into the East Coast. I think that would more than anything be more strategic for the Pac-12 versus adding some schools, not only in the conference footprint, but, with what is left over there in the Big 12. Mm.
So, Brian, who's going to be starting behind center for the New Orleans Saints?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. I think it's going to be interesting because I do think that Sean Payton is going to go into these preseason games to, really have kind of a bit of an open eye. There's no more, no more veterans, really around. You're obviously talking about some of the depth chart has been kind of chipped away from both the financial perspective and just guys moving on. But I think Taysom Hill probably is the first guy off the bench. But I ultimately think this is Jameis Winston's job to lose. I think he's comfortable in the system now. He's certainly much more of that traditional mold. And I think this is obviously a team not only in transition, but they're kind of looking at the next couple of years. Do they Are they really comfortable with what's happening in that quarterback room? Maybe they're another team that kind of gets involved in some of those quarterback sweepstakes. We've already heard Aaron Rodgers' name being out on the market. You know, obviously Denver being connected with him quite a bit since draft time. But there are a lot of others out there. And I think the Saints could be a potential player as well in terms of some of those quarterback names that might not be in the move this year, but next year as well, if this quarterback battle isn't sorted out between Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston.
Who's an NFL team that we're not talking about that we probably should? There's always somebody out there who kind of comes out of nowhere. And I'm not talking necessarily as a Super Bowl contender, but as a team that's going to, you know, win a division that we weren't expecting and could make a little bit of a run in the playoffs.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's so funny because, you know, it feels like every year we were used to talking about the New England Patriots, but they trailed off so badly last year that I don't think anybody's kind of looked at the roster and the way they've really tried to, you know, upgrade a lot of positions there. Certainly they splashed some cash in free agency. And if Cam Newton is really healthy and was able to get back to some of that form that we saw early last season, then I think, you know, the New England Patriots can make a big turnaround now. You know, you look at some of the wide receiver core, they've upgraded there. I know there's going to be a lot of focus on when Mac Jones might take over, but you know, I think Cam Newton showed enough flashes to where you saw some progress in this team. And I think they've upgraded in key spots. Obviously, they have the greatest coach in NFL history in Bill Belichick. And you just know that the way that season transpired, not just with Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl, but just the way that they trailed off so significantly, you know, there's going to be a lot of motivation in that building in Foxborough to turn things around, get back to competing in a division that seems pretty wide open, even with, you know, Buffalo, you know, looking like one of the top contenders in the AFC. But, you know, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how that division in particular, and I'd also, you know, kind of throw out the Chargers as well. I think they're kind of the trendy team, I think, when you ask around the league. A new coaching staff, you know, which is a bit of an unknown, but everybody loves Justin Herbert, loves what he can do with the football. And I think going into the sophomore season, maybe that's a team that does make a jump in terms of that record compared to where they were a year ago.
I saw that Deshaun Watson was not at practice today with the Texans for undisclosed reasons. I've been curious as to how he's back at practice with all the cases of assault against him. How does this play out, Brian? Is he paying for these things to go away? Does this hit him at a bad time, middle season? How do you think this plays out?
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, when ultimately does the NFL league office make a decision on Deshaun Watson? You know, I think that's what the Texans are ultimately kind of beholden to. You know, I don't think they, you know, in a perfect world, he would obviously have been traded already. You know, I think they would have preferred certainly, you know, some clarity on the situation, but, you know, they don't have it. And, you know, contractually, you know, they're kind of boxed into a corner, you know, with Deshaun Watson in that he has not been put on the exempt list, the commissioner's exempt list. You know, he's not been, you know, formally charged by any of these crimes. You know, that those investigations, those legal processes are still playing along. And frankly, they can't really do much, you know, from an organization standpoint. Yeah, he's got to come to practice because he doesn't want to lose out on $50,000 a day. You know, I think that in an ideal world, they would have some clarity before the preseason game start. But I don't think they're going to get it. I think this is going to be a situation that certainly continues to drag on into the season. And I think for the coaching staff itself, you know, trying to establish a new culture down there, trying to figure out what they have in terms of that roster and turning things over. It's all just a difficult decision. And I would imagine that the things, it's just something out of their hands. And so that is difficult to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And ultimately, I would imagine the commissioner's office is going to step in and ultimately put him on there. But something's got to prompt that. And we're not to that point just yet. And so it's made for certainly a tricky situation down there in camp.
Brian, appreciate it, man. Always great to catch up with you. Great insight, as always, and I look forward to talking to you again here soon.
Thanks, Brian.
Oh, absolutely, guys. Good to be on with you.
Brian Fisher, you can follow him on Twitter, at Brian D. Fisher, and, of course, read his stuff at Athlon. Good stuff. Really good stuff.
What is going on with Deshaun Watson?
I don't know. It's
How is he not on exempt?
I don't know, but he needs to be there. Because if you're the Texans, you're like, hey, what –
I can't.
And if your other team's like,
I can't go into the start of the season with him as my starting quarterback.
And especially paying him the amount of money that you're having to pay him.
That horse did not want to jump that.
Just watching the equestrian where they're jumping, this horse comes up and he's like, uh-uh. No.
She's going to try to go. She's trying to loop her back around and get him to go over it. Oh, he did it that time.
There you go.
These horses are incredible. You know what's crazy about this equestrian and them jumping over these things? Some of these poles are as high as that horse's head.
Yeah.
So think about a pole being as high as your head and jumping that.
No, thank you.
These horses.
Yeah, this horse has had it. He is done.
Oh, he's done. That's a small obstacle. He's like, nah, you jump it. You get off.
I'm going to get on your back and let's
hit,
go.
Like, every pole. I'm like, did you even leave it and not hit a pole?
Yeah, that guy like two or three ago. He had 16 penalties. He was knocking them things.
That's not good.
Yeah. He's like,
I'd rather my horse quit like that one.
He's like Jake. He's like, they're anti-Jake. Like, poles are not fun.
Yeah.
None of that.
That horse just quit. She walked right off.
I think the horse is like, fine. Nope, done.
But come on, poles are fun.
Not for that horse.
Not for these horses, man.
All right. Hans and Scotty here on 97.5. Whoa. Horse got a little buck to it, too.
They have to jump that sumo wrestler?
Now we got ourselves an event.
Did you see that sumo wrestler? They have to jump a sumo wrestler. That's crazy.
This guy's huge.
All right, coming up next, we spin the wheel. Sports Roulette straight ahead right here on the Zone Sports Network.
With Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
The general manager for the Utah Jazz, Justin Zanuck. Is it safe to say that you were going to make re-signing Mike Conley a priority?
Certainly, we value Mike and what he's meant to our team. Obviously, I can't comment on how things will roll out. However, we do have a plan in place. We love him. Each move that you guys see that comes out, whether it's a draft pick, a trade, a signing, I know there's this urge to have like a hot take, but evaluating those in a silo is tough. In a couple weeks, you look back and look at it in its entirety of what we needed to do and what we were able to execute on. I think the bigger picture becomes more clear. That picture is not completed yet with a few more stages we have to go here. We have a plan, and hopefully we'll get it done.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7. Presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
360!
It's time to spin the wheel and talk some sports. This is another edition of Sports Roulette with Hans Olsen and Scotty G. On 97.5, 1280 The Zone. And the Zone Sports Network.
Scotty, 97.5, 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's another edition of Sports Roulette. Hey, right now, you can take $1,000 off LASIK. All you have to do is call 801-253-3080 at Davis Vision Center. Ask for Robin. She'll bring you in for a no-pressure free consultation. See if you're a quality candidate for LASIK. And if you are, folks, you're getting $1,000 off. But you got to call 801-253-3080. You can also check them out online at davisvisionmd.com. All right, lot of stories on the old wheel today, so Lloyd, fire it up.
A quick resignation.
Stories like this always baffle me, Scotty. You saw the Syracuse women's head basketball coach, Quentin Hilsman, resigned. And obviously the university commented on it and said, yeah, we talked and best for both of us to move on. This guy's been the head coach at Syracuse since 2006. In 2016, he made it to a national championship game. He's the all-time winningest coach in women's basketball history. He's been there since 2006. And you've got all these claims that have popped up. Multiple women, you know, claiming that he did this, this, and this.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of worries about things like this. Because it's not like Quentin just in the last 2 years or 3 years decided to start awkwardly putting his hands around girls. It's not like over the last two or three years he just turned into a belligerent coach and made some of the comments about beating them up and physically harming them if they don't do what he asks. Like, this guy's been there since 2006.
Yeah.
That's a lot of women that you at some point come in contact with. That's 16, 15 seasons that you've been with Syracuse. And all of a sudden it's like, resign, I'm gone, bye. Yeah. Please don't say anything else. Nobody else come forward. University's like, yep, we got rid of the problem, bye.
That's probably a lot of, hey, we're going to give you your contract. You keep your mouth shut, we'll keep your mouth shut. You resign and we'll all move on from this. When in reality, there's a lot of young women who played for him that probably have they probably have some stuff they'd like to say.
But that's my biggest concern.
Yeah.
Okay, so Syracuse, were you burying stuff? Did you know? Because these accusations, some of them coming, I think, from as far back as 3 years ago, in some of the claims that I was reading, some players, three claimed that Hilsman gave them forehead kisses after discussing playing time.
Ugh.
Detailed another incident when he came up behind a player, wrapped his arms around her, and placed his hand near her pelvic area.
This is just gross.
Yeah, then there's the claims of how belligerent he could get, threatening to beat them up. So in stories like this, Scotty, my biggest concern, when I see a coach has been there since 2006, coaches don't just change in a two-year, three-year period.
No, they do not.
This guy's been who he is.
Yeah.
Since 2006. So Syracuse, what have you done? How many complaints have you buried? And all of a sudden, in a day and age where one complaint is enough to get your job, in a cancel culture like we're in, one complaint is enough to get your job, well, is it just the time of day? Is it this year? Is it now today's climate that changed things?
Sadly, probably.
So,
don't you think?
Yeah, I do think, because all the coaches I know are who they are.
Yeah, yep.
And who they have been. They don't get worse. They typically get progressively better off of complaints.
Correct.
So I'm a little bit worried how long this guy has been leaving a reign of terror behind him. And I hope that there aren't a bunch of abused women that have been changed forever psychologically because this man mishandled them.
Yeah. Yep.
Physically or emotionally. That's my concern.
Lloyd, spin it.
The end of an era or two.
You see, Ric Flair's done with the WWE.
Oh.
72 years old, was still under contract with the WWE.
He still had a contract.
Yeah.
Good for him.
They parted ways today. The Nature Boy's done.
Well, he's 72.
Yeah, he should be done. He's been wrestling with the World Wrestling Federation since 1991.
Wow.
16-time world champ.
That's our era right there, man.
That was the heyday. That was the heyday. Probably 80. I got into it in 86, 87. Do you remember the Hulk Hogan cartoon back in the day with Junkyard Dog?
Yep.
And that was kind of the heyday for me. That's when I fell in love with professional wrestling and these beefcakes and the British Bulldog and Ric Flair. And they were all larger than life characters. Jake the Snake.
With your wrestling background and your football background, had somebody said, hey, look, let's get you in on, let's do a little WWE.
Do you remember when my Uncle Phil told the story of...
Didn't they try to get him in it?
Well, him and Merlin.
Yeah.
Something
like the Battling Mormons or something?
No, it was something, and the Kodiak Kid, like Grizzly Bear and the Kodiak Kid.
Oh, I thought it was some like Mormon thing they were going to do.
I can't remember, but I remember my Uncle Merlin Olsen and Phil Olsen were offered a contract by the WWF and actually put into a wrestling match, and Merlin had Phil do it. Like Merlin's like, no, you go do it. And Merlin stood back and watched it all and was like, no, we're not doing that. And when he came out, he's like, well, you can do it. I'm not doing it. And Phil's like, well, I'm not doing it if you're not doing it. So I was very much under the impression coming out of college. Number one, I just wanted to play in the NFL. So WWF was kind of the
back. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I was always under the impression you couldn't do it unless you were altered.
And like chemically.
Yeah. And I never wanted to alter myself.
Well, isn't that true, though?
I do think, yeah. I mean, that was always the impression I was under, was the only way to get back in the ring and doing the things that you needed to do was to be somehow chemically altered.
Yeah.
And it Jose was Canseco thinks these guys do it too much.
Right?
Right.
And it was him and Bond. I like how I like how you bring up Canseco, but never Barry.
No. Jose Canseco.
You're always going to Jose. Yeah, Mark McGuire. Yeah, even Mark McGuire's like,
these guys were doing a little bit too much.
So I just had that negative impression about it, Scotty. So if I could have got away from that, you know I'm theatrical. You know I'm a little bit crazy. I probably would have given it a try, even though I remember watching Tough Enough. Do you guys remember that series that ran, Tough Enough?
I don't remember that.
It was kind of like...
I would have paid good money to see Hans Olsen taking like a pizza cutter to some guy's face.
I don't think
that was not good.
I'm not going to be Mankind. That definitely wouldn't be my character.
Taking a barbed wire and just wrapping it around Mankind's throat.
Was it Mankind that took the most notorious beating in WWF history?
Yeah, probably.
Didn't he get thrown off the top of a death cage?
I think he broke a lot of bones, actually, doing that.
Now he's on. Now he's on the movie Peanut Butter Falcon. Do you know he and Jake the Snake?
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, Mankind and Jake the Snake were both in that movie.
Mankind was not. Wait, oh, they had those wrestlers.
He was the ring announcer.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
I was trying to Robert think. Foley, is that his name? Mick Foley?
Mick Foley.
Mick Foley, yeah.
And Saki.
That dude was nuts. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Hans and Scotty Lloyd, you want to sneak in one more, or what do you? Your call here.
Qualifying at a familiar course.
All right, so Scotty, me, you, and Lloyd have all played at Talents Cove.
Yes.
We know the course, gorgeous, just on the west side of Utah Lake.
Yep, great views. Got to battle the mosquitoes a little bit, but other than that, it's great.
So, Lloyd, you were well aware that the Corn Ferry qualifying round was there yesterday.
Corn Fed what? Yeah.
No, not the Corn Fed Meathead. The Corn Ferry Tour, which is the PGA. It's a PGA Tour event that's held at the Oak Ridge Country Club. Well, the qualifier was held at Talents Cove. My best score ever at Talents Cove is an 81. It's my best score ever.
Yeah. Felt really good about it, I'm sure.
Never broke 80.
Yeah.
Lloyd, I don't know what yours is. Scotty, I don't know what yours is. But you know that course is difficult, and that's from the Golds. They've got another level that's the tips. Well, they had the qualifier round, and there were, there were three men that qualified for the Corn Ferry Tour shooting a 61 at Talents
Cove. Hey, wait a minute. A 61?
Yes.
Wow.
An 11 under 61. Three guys shot an 11 under 61 to tie for the low round. And they all, of course, advanced now to the Corn Ferry Tour at Oak Ridge Country Club.
Must have been perfect conditions.
I bet they had a lot of spin on their ball. Probably got a couple of...
I'm sure they were spinning it, yeah.
Got a couple of lucky turns. But former BYU golfer Patrick Fishburne and Daniel Summerhays both qualified to be a part of the Corn Ferry Tour. Patrick Fishburne shot a 60... Yeah, let's see. I think it was a 64, yeah. Sorry, Rasmussen shot a 64. 8 under 64. Does that blow your guys' mind? I've played Talents Cove. I'll
61.
Bet,
yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I bet I've played it 30 times, 40 times.
If you were to
times.
Tell me they were 11 under for, say, the tournament or whatever, I figured, oh, that's like a normal four-round tournament. Like, there's four rounds. Like, to shoot 11 under on the day.
On the day.
Total is
on the day, guys.
Unbelievable. 61.
A 61.
Wow.
On that course, from the tips. it's just shocking to me. I think I'm decent at golf. I'm okay at golf. Like, I feel like I'm good at golf. But to think somebody goes out there and hits 11 under. Karen made 12 birdies and one bogey. That's how he got to the 11 under. 12 of the 18 holes he birdied and one bogey. Kim made 9 birdies and had an eagle. So congratulations to those guys. Congratulations to Talon's Cove. That's great that you guys could host that qualifying event. And can't wait to see how it all turns out Oak Ridge Country Club.
You know, I got to imagine they're excited and they're proud. And they're also like, did you have to go shoot a 61? Maybe like 67, 68, but 61. Holy cow, you tore our course apart.
Yeah. I do wonder, do you think that, like, does Talon's Cove, are they like, oh boy, 61? Or maybe not, man. You know, when you got these golfers, you know, they're going to go and probably tear up any course in the state.
Yeah. All right. Hans and Scotty here on 97.5.
Nibbly.
Nibbly?
Yeah. I don't think they even touch
it. Let's see how you do with that water.
Is Mick Riley still around?
Yes, it is. See how you do at Mick Riley.
Yeah.
You're not touching those.
When's the last time we played at Mick Riley?
You know, my father-in-law and his dad played Mick Riley all the time because they lived kind of in that area. And I remember when there was a certain shot that my father, it was kind of a blind shot going in, and my father-in-law just goes, aim for the smokestacks. Well, now there's no smokestacks, so you can't really, those Murray smokestacks. But
yeah,
but right. Yeah, I've played a bunch of rounds out there with them.
That's how a young Lloyd Cole used to get to school over at Hillcrest Junior High.
Oh, really?
Cut right through there.
Through Mick Riley?
48th. Yeah, I lived just off 48th.
Did you have to dodge the drives?
Yes. Yep.
Mick Riley is a 9-hole city course that it's 9 difficult holes, man. That's actually a very tough 9 holes. And they have redone their clubhouse. Have you guys been out there
No.
since they? Holy moly. I went out there about a month ago, redid their clubhouse, and it is gorgeous out there. We've got some great golf in this state, man. Really good golf. But I love this Corn Ferry Tour that it comes through Utah and obviously ends up at Oak Ridge Country Club. Played out there three times. And that's a tough course.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's any tougher than Talon's Cove, though.
No. Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Time to get those carpets clean. Get them zero res clean. All you have to do is call 801-288-9376. You can get three rooms of carpets clean for $33 per room, and the fourth room is free. Again, 801-288-9376. That's 801-288-9376. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
The Top 60 and 60 is back on the Zone Sports Network. Get your college football fix every day at 1:30 as the Zone counts you down to the start of the 2021 season by listing off the top 60 players in the state of Utah as voted on by the local media. You'll also hear from the coaches as they talk about the players that will impact their season the most. It's the Top 60 and 60, weekdays at 1:30, presented by Cypress Credit Union and Icon on your home of the best college football coverage in Utah. 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Hans and Scotty here on 97.5 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Twitter is a weird, weird place, man. Just weird. Hey, I had this story on Sports Roulette on one of the wheels, and we didn't have a chance to get to it, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it real quick. So, apparently there was a big, nasty fight today in the Giants. It was the first day of pads.
Always chippy.
For the Giants. Apparently there was a massive brawl that ended with the quarterback, Daniel Jones, in the bottom, pinned down in the bottom of the pile. Joe Judge, the head coach, addressed it, punished his players. Judge could be heard delivering an expletive-laden tirade at the team, made all the assistant coaches leave the field. It was just him and the players while he made them run sprints and do push-ups. And then brought them back together for another 10 minutes of penalty induced conditioning in a semicircle. I wonder if he made him ran bowls of the bowl in the ring or something.
A fight, a playground fight.
The incident started when tight end Evan Engram retaliated after a late hit to running back Corey Clement. Safety Logan Ryan then came and leveled Engram from behind. The rest of the team, including Daniel Jones, then joined into the melee, which drew immediate ire from the coaching staff. Jones was at the bottom of the pile and had to be pulled out by offensive lineman Kenny Wiggins.
Oh, boy. Your starting quarterback.
Your starting quarterback
at the bottom of the pile.
At the bottom of a pile of dudes fighting, had to be pulled out by an offensive lineman. Asked why he got involved, Jones said, "Well, hey, I'm part of the team." Everybody's fighting, so I guess I got to get in it and fight.
I don't think people fully grasp how absolutely crazy that is. You know, you've got athletes that are making $12 million. 18 million, 22 million dollars just for the game, to play. Their body and their worth is 12, 15, 22 million. It's the same reason that when I hit Peyton Manning as a rookie, I was instantly ripped in half. I mean, Jim Mora came unglued. And of course, later it was explained to me, like, you realize if you hurt him, You're costing Jim Irsay whatever Peyton was making at the time, $10 million or $15 million. Like, you realize if you hurt him, you cost him that money, and you cost us all these wins.
What was the message he said to you?
Oh. I can't remember. It was something
he's along... worth more than your life.
Yeah, his contract is worth more than your life or something. Yeah, it was very belligerent, and it was angry and mean and hurtful. And I thought I was going to get cut for it. It turns out Vic Fangio loved it. Todd Grantham, the D-line coach, loved it.
Yeah.
And it actually helped me make the team because they loved seeing Peyton get hit. But the O-line jumped me. Peyton didn't get involved with the fight. The O-line jumped me.
Oh, yeah, he didn't have to.
I got hit in the back. I got torched. No other D-lineman jumped in to help me because I was just a rookie and they wanted me cut anyways.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing with these fights, man. Everybody's worth millions of dollars. There aren't a lot of friends yet because you're in camp and you've got a 100-man roster that has to be whittled down to essentially 50 that are going to make money. You know, 60-something with practice squad that are going to be making money. And everybody hates everybody. But you have a quarterback get down in the bottom of that pile that's your starter?
Who's a starter and a first-round pick. And, just a year ago?
And was good in his rookie year.
Pretty
He was moving around a little bit.
They ran 12 minutes of 100-yard wind sprints, two sets of push-ups, and then some kind of a conditioning drill where they ran in a circle.
Which is another questionable thing. Like, these are grown men, and you're punishing them this way.
Yeah, that's the thing. That doesn't fly. You do that in high school. Maybe a little bit in college, I guess, maybe.
I never saw it in the NFL. We were never punished that way.
Yeah.
Not with conditioning. We were punished. Jim Mora punished us, but Tony Dungy never did.
Yeah.
Tony Dungy didn't believe in punishment. Jim Mora, man, we were coming. We had I think Fridays were our walkthrough, and we came out lazy and relaxed, and Jim Mora flew off the handle, and all the pads, all the jerseys had been taped to the pads, and they were in the bins in the locker room. And Jim flies off the handle. He's like, go in, get your pads, get them on. We're doing full pads. And this was before, obviously, the restructure of the CBA. We had to go in, take our game jerseys off our pads, take all the tape off, put on jerseys, get our helmets, and come out for practice.
The training crew, I'm sure, lost their mind.
I mean, hours and hours of work. But you don't punish guys at that level by being like, all right, circle up.
Yeah.
We're doing the wheel.
That's going to lose your locker room real quick.
Oh, that's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah. The quarterback, Daniel Jones, said, I'm going to pay my punishments. I'm fine. I don't regret anything I did. I'm out there protecting my guys. You're a quarterback. You're not protecting anybody. At the end of the day, I'm a grown man. Going to pay my dues. That's what this is about.
You were a grown man in a fetal position at the bottom of a pile.
Like, guys, get off. Get off. Guys, get off me.
Somebody help. His offensive line had to pull him out.
Those aren't pillows.
What did you... Oh, my gosh. Did an offensive lineman pull him out from the bottom of the pile?
An offensive lineman pulled him out.
Was Saquon Barkley, is he back to practice?
No word on Saquon on this one.
Could you see Saquon Barkley being in that fight? Just coming back from ankle?
Saquon's far away from that as he possibly can be.
But let's say, you know, one of your big guns is in there in the mix and gets hurt. Oh, I couldn't even imagine the fallout for everybody.
All right, hands of Scotty. Kickoff your 1 o'clock hour next. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.